buckle your seatbelt, turn up the radio, roll up the windows, and hit that gas pedal. It is time for another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. Loaded show. It's Joe Manish and Burge. You know the deal. It's week 18. We've got one game left, Steelers and Ravens, to decide the last playoff spot, the fourth seed in the AFC, but everything else is pretty much set. Boys, it was a pretty – I don't think there was any great games, but there was a lot of important games today.
Yeah, I mean, in all seriousness, there weren't a lot of close games today, especially the ones that mattered. But it, as always, with week 18, it's exciting because you know what's right around the corner. It's the best time of the year, NFL playoffs.
Yeah, I'm excited for the playoffs, you know, in a few days. But I actually kind of felt that a lot of these games had a preseason vibe to it, whether it was because teams were out of it and playing backup quarterbacks, or whether teams didn't necessarily care about their seeding, like the Chargers, and didn't care if they were going to be, you know, five or six. Jim Harbaugh rested Justin Herbert. And then I think a critical error on the other side in the NFC. The Eagles really fumbled an opportunity to get the number two seed by playing their backups instead of having their starters kind of roll through the Commanders. We'll see if it matters. But ultimately, I think, you know, the sentiment in Philadelphia is that the head coach made a pretty big blunder.
Well, Manish, that's a great jumping off point. Why don't we start there? I feel like this will be a very easy thing, a very current thing for Eagles fans to point back on if anything goes bad in the playoffs. We talked about it right before we jumped on the pod. The change from going to playing an untested young Packers team that's really banged up to hosting a 49ers team that's coming off like multiple deep playoff runs. Not a super deep run last year. I think that, like you said, I think it's a huge blunder for Sirianni. I understand being healthy, but I mean, I'd rather risk the health and play the Packers than kind of like cut off your nose to spite your face to play the 49ers in that wild card weekend game.
Yeah, I totally agree. And entering Sunday, it would have been either the Niners or the Rams, even if the Rams hadn't taking care of business against the Cardinals. But, Nick Sirianni's logic in the run-up to the game was that he can't guarantee that his team would get the number two seed, but he could guarantee that guys get some valuable rest. And look, I understand the idea of guys getting some time off, but when you have an opportunity to lock in the Packers, because they were set at seven, at the seven seed, regardless of what happened today, if you can guarantee yourself an opportunity to be in position to potentially play them, I think you got to go for it. Even though, there is an element that's out of your control because you didn't know that the Bears were going to lose to the Lions. But is it really that shocking that the Bears ended up losing to the Lions? Because if you started Jalen Hurts and your offensive line, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith for the entire game, you pretty much guaranteed that you were going to beat a Commanders team that was, dead and buried, a while ago. So I just think it's a critical mistake. Now they do face the 49ers, who are banged up in their own right, but clearly a tougher challenge, I believe, than the Packers would have been.
Well, I sit here and think, like, why not play them for half or a little bit into the third quarter? Because, not only does that get them reps, and I know they've had 18 weeks of reps in the season, but like that week off, we've seen it backfire in the past for these teams where they set their players and they come out and they're not ready for the first game of the playoffs. And for me, I mean, you look at on the other side in the AFC with the Patriots needed to win to lock in their second seed. And they played all of their starters well into this game. Probably, I think it was into the fourth quarter, and they ended up, rolling through Miami to secure that number two seed. Now that also was the same kind of thing where you had the opportunity to play a team like the Chargers, who's not necessarily playoff tested, or, the potential of facing the Bills for a third time in the season. And the Patriots played their players. They lock in the second seed. I don't get the logic of sitting them for the entire week when there's still something to play for.
Yeah. And this Eagles team is such a Jekyll and Hyde team that I feel like they've finally been playing well down the stretch here. I understand the second half performances from the offense. I understand that, but they're still winning games. They're winning on defense. They're winning on the ground. And taking your starters off the field puts a hard stop to all the momentum that they have. And I feel like the one thing that the Eagles had going for them is, I know it might be a little disjointed. You have players on and off the reservation. Everything kind of looks a little disjointed, like I just said, but like you still had momentum. You still had winning. You still had winning games going down the stretch. So I really don't get the putting your foot, you're putting your foot in the ground and stopping all of the momentum here. And like you just said, dude, there was a million teams today. Josh Allen plays one series. Drake May plays a little bit into the second half. There's a bunch of these, there's a bunch of these examples where you can come out, play your guys, don't put your players in harm's way. Dude, like, well, who's to say that they have to run the read option in the first half if Jalen Hurts is playing? Who says that they have to run any quarterback powers? Who's saying they're running anything besides half field reads anyway? Like, there's ways to keep your quarterback safe in situations like that, but I just feel like Manish, like that is such like a football, like non-thinking, like do what I do and you can F off, like football guy, like, oh, I can't control the second to who gets the second seed, but I can control my guys being healthy. Dude, what if somebody slips and falls coming into the stadium? What if somebody Rajon Rondoms themselves and falls getting out of the bathtub? What if somebody likes the wrong Instagram model's comment and punches a picture frame a la Marcus Smart? Dude, like, there's so many things that you can, like, that is the dumbest, like, most Nick Sirianni quintessential microcosm of what's wrong with the Eagles. They have all this talent, but there's such a do what we do raw attitude that I feel like it gets in the way. And this is another one of those things where it's just like, oh, outsmarted yourself again, Sirianni. Good job.
I mean, are they even banged up? Are Hurts and them even banged up in any way? Like, if they were really banged up and like hurt, okay, I can see it. Like what the Chargers did with Justin Herbert. The dude was playing with a fractured left wrist, I think it was. Like, it makes sense for them to sit him when they're not even going to have a chance to play a home playoff game when you're talking about just you know, jostling in that wild card seating. But, like, if they're 100% healthy, how can you not just play them for a half? And no matter what the result of the game is at the half, take them out at that point. You just gave it a shot.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I don't like it. I thought it was a terrible decision. Before the game, I thought it was a terrible decision. During the game, when the Eagles were actually winning, I just think it's a losing mentality. It's a loser's mentality. Which is, you know, funny. It's funny to say that they're the reigning Super Bowl champions. But you know, if you're going to be fair about it, I thought it was the wrong message to send. And again, we'll see if it bites them in the butt. But I'd much rather, as an Eagles fan, be staring at the prospect of playing a Packers team, which I don't think is going to put up a fight, versus a 49ers team that is banged up but still has, you know, some firepower.
Now, let's hop to the team that reaped the benefits of that loss, the Bears. They end up going down 19-16 to the Lions at home. Caveat in this game, Caleb Williams sets the Bears' single-season record for passing yards. Can anybody – I have two trivia questions. How many passing yards – and who did he pass for Bears all-time records? We'll keep this like 10, 15 seconds for the people.
Was it Jay Cutler?
Nope.
I'm going to say Jim Miller.
No, it is Eric Kramer.
Oh, Eric Kramer, yeah.
The second most famous Kramer, yes. And then does anybody want to take a stab at how many passing yards did Caleb Williams have, or what the number was that he needed to break the record?
It's hilarious.
It's a hilariously low number.
Oh, then I'll say 3,700.
I was going to say 36.
3,844. Caleb Williams passes 3,844 on the season to become the single season all-time passing champion for the Bears there. But hey, I think this is just a little validation for the Bears. They didn't play great in this game. I don't know if you guys watched any in this game. I was kind of bouncing around. The Pats were up big, so I was kind of bouncing around. Dude, the Lions were shot out of an effing cannon in this game. We could say what you want. We've been pretty critical of Dan Campbell on this podcast, saying he's kind of a coordinator merchant, a talent merchant. I'm using hip kid language. I'm really not sure if it's landing right now. But like this kid, dude, they came out today, and then I watched they kicked a field goal as time expired. And as the offense ran off the field with like 3 seconds left after they took a timeout, dude, all the offensive linemen, all the offensive guys are coming up to Campbell, dapping him, hugging him. And I don't know. I just feel like it's a down year for the Lions. I do think that they need to get younger at the quarterback position. They need to have some kind of succession plan or like a retread plan, because that seems to be like the new trend with like the Bakers and the Sam Darnolds and the Jared Goffs himself. So I don't think this is a big loser weekend for the Lions. I mean, they are going to miss the playoffs, but I don't think this is all doom and gloom for the Lions, and I don't think it's doom and gloom for the Bears as well. I think this is the perfect game that like the team that wins doesn't go under 500. They can ride off in the sunset, go to Cancun happy, and the team that loses are like, oh, we get to play next week. Like, everybody's happy. I don't know. I hate those kind of weekends because it's sports. I want somebody crying, but.
Well, I mean, the Bears showed some fight in this one. I didn't personally catch any of it, but like,
that's true.
16 fourth quarter points. I mean, they showed some fight at the end, which I guess if you're going to lose the game for a team that really had not a whole heck of a lot to play for other than, you know, winning and securing that seed, thanks to the Eagles, they secure it anyways, but that showed some fight. They didn't give up. They were down. They didn't give up against a division rival. And, you know, I mean, I guess that's what you can ask for. If you're going to take a loss, you want it to kind of show late game effort to make a comeback there.
Yeah, I think the Bears are frauds. You know, I said that a few weeks ago. I think they're fraudulent. If you look at their last month and a half, you know their best win is the Eagle game on Black Friday, in which they were just an aberration, I think. They ran for, what, about 250-some-odd yards. That's not going to happen again. I'm not a big believer in them at all. Now, I am a big believer that Ben Johnson's going to get this thing sustained for a while, and I think that, you know, maybe at some point down the road, maybe it's next year, maybe the year after, there'll be a viable Super Bowl contender. And don't tell me that they're the number two seed. I mean, how could they not be for real? I mean, they're not for real. You watch these games; they scored, you know, two touchdowns in the fourth quarter to a team that had been eliminated from the playoffs, and then ultimately lost the game. So I'm not going to give them, you know, additional points, no gold stars for that. They beat the Packers when Jordan Love was knocked out before halftime, so they went against the backup for the second half. And Malik Willis is a good player, but he is a backup. He's not the starter. And that was such a weird game with the onside kick in the waning moments. Total fluke. So you can say that, you know, they're a legitimate contender. I don't believe it. You know, much like I don't believe that there are a number of teams that are among the 14 in the playoffs who are, you know, also frauds. I mean, I just think there's a lot of Fugazi teams out there this year. The Bears are the number two seed. If you tell me with a straight face that you think that the Chicago Bears are the second best team in the NFC, I think you're delusional. I don't think that's even close to true. I had mentioned a moment ago that I think the Packers are dead men walking, but I think that if Jordan Love plays, they have a very real chance of beating the Bears, because they beat them earlier this year. They probably would have beaten them if Love didn't get knocked out late in the second quarter a few weeks ago in Chicago. So I'm not a believer in the Bears. You can't convince me after watching for 17 weeks that they are in the same class as any of the teams in the NFC West. And even the Philadelphia Eagles, who I've been critical of for much of this season, and who lost to the Bears on Black Friday in Philadelphia. If there are ever a rematch, the Eagles will win that game. I'm just not a believer in them. I don't believe it's their time right now. Great, they got a number two seed. I think they're going to be one and done.
I think there's a good chance they could be, but again, I don't remember a year in the NFL where the playoffs were as wide open as they are right now. There's no juggernaut. There's no Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, you know, guaranteed to make the Super Bowl. There's no Patriots of old, you know, ready to just waltz through the playoffs to get there. I outside of like these division winners that are going to end up in there, you know, like the AFC North and the NFC South, where they kind of have these teams that I think we all agree are less than the rest of the pack. You can make a case for any one of them that they could win the Super Bowl. And that's what makes this playoff so fascinating. I mean, the Bears are the two seed. They don't even have the second best record in the conference. So yeah. I tend to agree with your point about the NFC West teams, but I'm not going to sit here and call them fraudulent. I was kind of
yeah,
I like what they're doing. So I like what they're doing. I like what they're doing. And I think if you're going to put a gun to my head when it comes time to make picks next week, I'm taking the Bears over the Packers.
Yeah. Bird, you said that you can make a case for any of these teams. I would love to hear your case for the Carolina Panthers to make
the Super Bowl. Said besides the teams in the NFC South and the AFC North. Because
They're not going anywhere.
No, they're not.
Well, Burge, I think it is time to talk about our favorite NFC team.
NFC.
Let's keep pounding, my friend. The Panthers are your NFC South champions.
Let's
go. They go in to Tampa Bay. They lay an absolute turd in Tampa, and then they go back to their couches. Dude, the best part about this game, dude, this is a pro Baker Mayfield podcast. It's a pro Baker Mayfield podcast. But, bro, if you're somehow listening to this podcast, damn, does that first touch, what you said after the first touchdown pass, look dumb as hell. He goes, this is my division. This is my division. And then comes in a three-way tie with the Falcons and the Panthers at 8-9, and they end up fucking losing. I just – poetic justice and the way that – dude, they just couldn't take care of business against Miami, and they lost – like, I just find it so quintessential, like, bad football, bad division. Every single team in that division was backing into the playoffs, no matter who won it.
Yeah, you know – go ahead, Rich.
No, you go. I want to hear what you have to say.
It's funny because I can't imagine what Baker, Todd Bowles, Mike Evans, what those guys were thinking when they woke up this morning, knowing that they had to rely on the New Orleans Saints to bail them out to get them to the playoffs. But it was a competitive game. You know, if not for that late interception in the red zone by the Saints, who knows? Who knows what could have happened? But they don't have anybody to blame themselves. They had that 4-game losing streak before the win on Saturday. 3 of those 4 games were in the division. So it was right there for them. And even after losing 3 games in the division last week against a rookie quarterback in Miami, they could have righted the ship and made it a win and in scenario against Carolina, but they couldn't even beat the Dolphins. So nobody to blame but themselves. There's a different discussion that I think that we all agree on, but I do think it's kind of ridiculous that, you know, whether it was Tampa or Carolina, the fact that an 8-9 team is hosting a playoff game is absurd. And I think they're going to be hosting a team that's got, four or five more wins than them. It's kind of ridiculous. But, a good story for the Panthers to get into the playoffs. You know, relatively speaking, they're not very good. Relative to their recent history, it's certainly a significant improvement.
Dude, the Panthers are 8-9 and hosting a team that finished 1 game out of the number 1 seed.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
What's the point of divisions? Fucking do away with them and just rank them 1 through 7. Who gives a shit?
Nah, I disagree with that. I disagree so much.
I want the divisions. I agree.
You want the divisions.
Yeah, no, I definitely want. As a tomato can Pats fan to keep cleaning up, playing the Jets and Dolphins twice a year for the last 25 years, yes, I want divisions.
Oh, I thought you were arguing the other side of that, because I was going to be like, no, you got to have.
I was being flippant.
Okay, all right. The Bucs, since October, won 3 games. They were 5-2.
Yeah.
You couldn't fumble the bag there any worse.
Oh, we're getting hip, dude. We're going to get hip, dude.
I we were so high on them earlier on in the season. We really loved what they were doing down there. Now, do you think that, you know, maybe this is a tease for later on, but like Todd Bowles, you definitely got to be on the hot seat with Black Monday looming. Got to be there with the way they kind of fell apart in that season.
Yeah, I mean, the one caveat there is that team was incredibly banged up. I know that you don't want to make excuses, and an injury excuse is usually a pretty easy one to make. They were extremely banged up, but I don't know. That team, it just doesn't seem like a sustainable model with the coach quarterback, with all the aging. I know they hit on Egbuka. I know they hit on him. Nailed that name. Nailed it. Finally.
About time.
But, dude, Godwin's aging. Mike Evans aging. Baker's not a spring chicken. Todd Bowles isn't like a young, hip head coach that you want going into the future. They've got some of the young, exciting pieces on the offensive side. The defense is extremely banged up. But I don't know. It's one of those I think they could afford to middle it for one more season, see if they can try to – because, I mean, they're in a crappy division, right? That saves them a little bit more. I mean, if you run it back with Bowles and Baker, you're probably still the favorite to come out of that division. Depending if anything crazy goes on with quarterback movement or whatever, but I don't know. I forget, is it the Teppers that own the Who owns the whatever? Whoever owns Tampa, if you're listening.
Oh, no. Tampa's Carolina.
Yeah, whatever. Close enough. same division. But I would run it back. I would run it back one more season for with Bowles and with Baker. I think if you're gonna fire Bowles, you might as well clean house and get and kind of like start kind of peeling back some layers of that onion.
Yeah, I mean it'll be interesting to see. I mean, keep pounding, baby. I'll be rooting for the upset.
Never
I don't
stop pounding, Burge. That's the whole point. You're not supposed to stop. I love that Carolina team. That is an ugly, horrible team that we get one more game for, dude. They're not good at anything. They can run the ball. They're good at things that don't matter. They can stop the run and run the ball. Sick. I don't know. It's just they just strike me as that Patriots team that got into the playoffs and just got absolutely fucking flattened by the Bills on wild card weekend in 2021. It strikes me as the same team because it's the Panthers, dude. If they're not up, they can't come back. You know what I mean? They're mm-hmm. one of those teams. But dude. That being said, they do have a formula to beat the Rams, so they've done it before. But I don't know. I might do like some like crazy like bum ass parlay. There's like Panthers and Bears, Panthers, Eagles, Bears, like the home teams with the worst quarterback in every game. All right, let's get to the AFC side. There wasn't too much movement matchups wise. The Pats locked up the 2 seed. They're playing the Chargers. The Jags locked up the 3 seed. They're playing the Bills. And then we still have this interesting Baltimore Pittsburgh matchup for Sunday night football Sunday night to see who hosts Houston in the 4-7 matchup. Or in the 4-5 matchup. Jesus. Yeah. I can't read my own. I can't read my own handwriting. This is just like,
I have that same problem.
But dude, there wasn't a single compelling game out of any of these AFC teams. The Pats crushed the Dolphins. The Chargers, it was an interesting game, but they didn't play any of their starters versus the Broncos. The Jags flattened Tennessee. The Bills, I don't even think the Jets didn't even drive. I think the Jets drove south to play that game. I swear to God, dude, they didn't show up. And then obviously Pittsburgh and Houston played on Saturday, won on Saturday. And then we have this Baltimore-Pittsburgh game coming up. What I will say is, as a Patriots fan, I would way rather play this banged-up Chargers team than the Bills. I think that goes to the same thing as this the Eagles and Bears thing that happened in the NFC. The 49ers are a playoff-tested team with a coach-quarterback combo that you really don't want to see. And the Packers is still an upcoming team. I know they popped the Cowboys a couple years ago in the playoffs. So an upcoming young team, you really don't know what you're going to get. I see the Chargers and Bills like that same way. Dude, the Chargers had that really bad blown loss to the Jags a couple years ago. They were up 28-0, and then Trevor Lawrence ended up coming back and winning that game. So I think the Pats, if you get up on the Chargers a little bit, I think there's a little bit of a give-up packet-in factor for a Southwest Sun team coming to New England, having the precedent set already. And I think the Bills, dude, I think Josh Allen and the Bills, they have to know it's their year. Mahomes is out of the way. Burrow's out of the way. The NFC teams are going to beat each other up. So you're probably going to get an absolutely beat up team coming out of the NFC for the Super Bowl. So, I mean, this AFC is wide open, and even as a Bills hater, dude, like you are, I want nothing to do with the Bills this playoffs. Nothing.
No, I mean, I felt the same way. I mean, I think that this is the matchup that we wanted when we were talking about this last week, the week before. We wanted the Chargers if it wasn't going to be the 1 seed. And, you know, a West Coast team having to fly across the country. You've already mentioned it. A California team coming into New England in the middle of winter. Although next weekend, it's actually going to be pretty warm up here in New England. So it's not going to be your traditional winter type game. The travel definitely is going to be a part of it. I'm interested to see where they slot into this playoff schedule on Super Wild Card weekend. You're going to have games Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. I'm real curious to see where they fall. And, you know, the fact that their offensive line is so banged up, I think really benefits the Patriots, who have had some trouble with, pass rush, with the injuries and the depth on the defensive side. So I think it's a matchup we want to see. I mean, the Jags-Bills game is going to be kind of fascinating with the way the Jaguars have been playing down the stretch here, and the way the Bills, outside of, you know, whatever today was, they've had their share of struggles over the last month or so too, you know, having to come from behind to win, or, you know, the quarterback missing a wide open 2-point conversion to beat the Eagles a couple weeks ago. That's going to be interesting to see. I mean, Josh Allen will get to play a game and again, continue this entire Iron Man streak that continued today because he came out and he handed the ball off one time. Like the whole storyline in the AFC playoffs is just, I'm fascinated by it. It's so awesome with how wide open it is this year.
I love the fact that you touched on it a minute ago, Birch, about how wide open the playoffs in general are. Mm-hmm. Before this season, a team had lost 13-plus games and followed that up by winning 13-plus games only once in NFL history. It was the 1999 Colts, and it happened twice this year, the Patriots and the Jaguars. After winning today, the Jaguars qualified for that, and now the Jags and Pats are hosting playoff games. I just think it's fascinating that if you look at the slate, I can make a pretty reasonable argument that those two games, Bills at Jags and Chargers at Pats, are going to be the two best games on Super Wildcard Weekend. You know, Eagles, Niners, obviously in the mix as well. But I'm really fascinated to see who will come out of those two games, because I think any of those four teams can lay claim to winning their respective matchups. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really, and I'm not saying it because you guys are Pats fans, but I'm really looking forward to the Chargers-Pats. You know, Herbert last year was awesome until the first round of the playoffs when he was a turnover machine in Houston. I think in that game he threw more interceptions than he had all of the regular season. And there's a real, you know, serious and I think fair question to ask about Justin Herbert, and this is coming from a Justin Herbert believer, by the way, about whether he can deliver in the postseason, because he has not done it to this point. And what a great matchup. Two young quarterbacks, you know, budding stars. You can say that Herbert's already a star, but a budding star, obviously, in Drake May as well. So I'm really looking forward to that game. You know, a little added juice because you guys are Patriots fans, but I just think that is going to be such a fun game to watch as a guy who doesn't really root for either of those teams.
I could just picture the group chat this week. The group chat this week is going to be popping off.
I'm trying to find. I'm trying to see if they've opened. If they've had a look ahead line for that Pats. For that Pats game. But I don't know if this is just me being a pompous Pats fan. But the Pats are going to win that game by 30 fucking points. The Chargers have. I'm just being totally honest with you. Jim Harbaugh sucks in big games. Or was he John or Jim? Whoever the guy not in Baltimore is, Jim, is terrible in big games. He's already lost to his brother in a big game, dude. I'm just being hyperbolic.
I mean, that was a Super Bowl.
I'm just being hyperbolic here. If the lights didn't go off for 45 minutes, the 49ers would have won that game.
Yeah, I was at that game. It was a really weird game.
Yeah, dude, and I remember I think I was a freshman in college when that game was coming out, and I remember, like, we, like, forgot about the Super Bowl for, like, forgot about it. And I don't know, it's like going to a Christmas party forgetting Christmas, you know what I mean? We're all just hanging out, we look out, we're like, oh, fuck, they're playing football again, shit, we should keep watching. But I don't know, that just has a tomato can feel for me. I'm excited for this Bills-Jags matchup. Mm-hmm. I think this is classic. An immovable object meets an unstoppable force. You have Josh Allen, who smells blood in the water. You have the Jags, who are playing out of their goddamn mind. I don't know if you saw any of the locker room reactions again for the Jags today, dude. All the guys on the team got fucking Trevor Lawrence grills, dude. Oh, dude, so it was so funny. Awesome videos. Great team camaraderie coming out of here. So, this is like a hot. This is like when your rich buddy buys like a friggin' BMW right off the lot, right? You got the Jags, you got this fine oil machine, whatever, and then you got Uncle Jimmy who bought some fucking Civic, some 04 Civic Si off some dude named Randy up at Ridgeville, and he's been had in his garage for like 3 years, and he's finally gonna take it to the track, and it just so happens to go 207 miles an hour. Like, that's what's going on here. Have you ever seen the meme of the golf meme? It's John Daly and Tiger looking at each other on the course. That is literally the Bills and the Jags. It's the Jags. They've got all this talent. They've got everything going for them. They've got this new regime, this new young head coach. He's nice and prim and proper. And the other side is just Josh Allen with a cig in his mouth. He's like, let's fucking roll, dude.
Jags are the hottest team. They I think we had talked about it last week. They do enter the playoffs. 8-game winning streak, average margin of victory. In those 8 games, 19 points. So they've been rolling for 2 months. We'll see what happens
Somebody played the Jets every week. That would be their stats.
Yeah. Oh, the Jets, by the way, speaking of the Jets, we don't, you know, we'll make it quick, a quick drive-by. First team in NFL history not to have an interception, which is inconceivable and, you know, doubly embarrassing given that their head coach is a former defensive coordinator. And I think even perhaps more embarrassing, the Jets finished the season with their leading receiver being Garrett Wilson, who has not caught a pass since October 12th. 395 receiving yards, 0 yards since October 12th, yet he led the team in receiving.
Oh, my gosh. What a dreadful year for those Jets.
Yeah.
The Jets stink so bad. They traded their best player to the Colts. They went 1-8, and then they went 1-8.
That actually helps them.
That helps them.
And that helps them with the draft. Dude,
the Jets have the number 2 overall pick, and then I think they locked up the 12 overall pick. They have 2-12 right now because of the Colts. And then I'm going to say it every episode, that effing Rams – sorry, Mom. I know I've swore a couple times on this one. The Rams having a first-round pick that's going to be in the top 15 is insane to me, dude. It's crazy, dude. They have the Falcons pick. The Falcons stink, dude. Whatever. The last thing I want to touch on here is everybody talked about Houston's D. Everybody was hopping on Houston's D. Pause. Mm-hmm. Everybody was hopping on Houston's D the last couple weeks. Dude, they've gotten lit up 3 out of the last 4 games for 30 points. So I was doing some research. You know me, digging into the archives, digging out some stuff, doing some research, getting the analytics intern department, the BTT interns on my side. But, dude, so there was a stat about disguising coverage, like what you line up in versus what you run versus like scheme, this scheme versus that scheme. It was basically like a metric for scheme complexity. And the Houston Texans were so laughably in last place in complicated schemes that I think it just may be that time of the year. You know how somebody like the Bucks, like some of these young teams, like the Darnold Panthers a couple years ago, they're shot out of a cannon, the teams figure them out. I think the Houston defense is so talented and they're so good at doing what they do that they hadn't had to disguise it for whatever 13, 14 weeks. But now, since teams are getting, I think teams might be catching on a little bit since they're not disguising it. They kind of can. Quarterbacks are good when you don't disguise it. When they know what to do right away and right off the snap of the ball, it's a little easier for them to move the ball. So I want to see how that. It's going to be funny how there's the two teams that are going to play them, the Pittsburgh and then Baltimore, can present them two different challenges. Obviously, Lamar, one of the best dual threats to ever play. And then Aaron Rodgers, the only thing that hasn't gone yet is his mind. So I think they're two very interesting matchups for the Houston defense.
Real quick on that game, did you see that the Colts lined up 2 plays in a row with a fake punt?
Dude, back-to-back fake punts, back-to-back weeks, dude. Who did that last week? Somebody did back-to-back fake punts last week. And then somebody did back-to-back fake punts this week.
Yeah, let's go, dude. It was the Colts this week. They converted the first one. They did it again, and they caught Houston with too many men on the field. Unbelievable. I mean,
Riley. Yeah, I bet you that came from Ursay's daughter, dude. She's pulling the strings, dude.
Riley Leonard looked, you know, halfway decent in this game. So, yeah. I mean, maybe they did figure something out about the Texans and put it right on tape for the team they're going to play next week.
And then did you see well, one more piece of Colts news before we plug this thing up, as Bears used to say. You see that Philip Rivers might be going straight from the huddle to the sidelines?
I did see something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think – I mean, I saw the same thing that you guys did. I mean, that's a big leap. I'd be stunned if that happened. If he wants to get into coaching at this level, he's obviously a coach, you know, at the high school level. I think he would probably start as a quarterback's coach, and then you kind of work your way to – coordinator, maybe head coach, you know, maybe skip coordinator, but you know, going from never having coached in the NFL to coaching, being a head coach at the NFL level is extremely difficult. The Colts have actually done it, you know, when Ursay hired Jeff Saturday out of ESPN. I mean, that never really worked. So I mean,
that's probably like rule number one in her fucking notebook that she keeps on the sidelines. It's just like, hire an actual fucking coach. That's one on her notepad.
I do think that Rivers has, you know, he's got the makeup to be a leader and to be a head coach. It's just, you know, this is kind of fast tracking it a little bit too much. So I wouldn't think that that would happen, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least bit if he wants to do it, that he would, you know, find himself in as a potential head coach, you know, several years down the road.
Yeah, I agree. And, well, it won't be for the Colts anytime soon because they came out, I think it was earlier today or yesterday, and said that Coach and GM Steichen and the GM are going to stay for the 26-27 season, which I think is the right move. I don't think I think there's a lot of injuries and a lot of things that went sideways in that season. I like the fact that they went for it. But I think firing them and then giving the next guy fucking no first-round picks for the next 2 years to try to rebuild, you know what I mean, to be kind of pointless. So it's kind of the thing with the Bucks, right? How much better are you going to get by firing Shane Steichen and trying to rebuild it when you already have a win-now roster? You know what I mean? The Bucks and the Colts, I feel like, both have win-now rosters, especially with Jonathan Taylor. I mean, Jonathan Taylor's in his prime. He's a top two, top three running at worst. Top two, top three running back in the NFL. So I think that's another team that should be ready to run it back in 26-27, even though they flamed. Holy hell, was that a flame out. You guys got anything else week 18?
Yeah, just one quick thing. I think it'll be fascinating. We look back, you know, 10, 15 years from now, all of the good that Pete Carroll did to the Raiders franchise in the 1 year that he was the head coach, because he will not be back next year. And they were so bad that they locked up the number one seed. And if Mendoza is actually the franchise quarterback, they could really thank Pete Carroll, who was, you know, just there for, you know, 5 months or however long a season.
Dude, I remember how we talked about Campbell and when the offense was coming off the field and everybody was high-fiving him, hugging him and stuff like that. They could kiss somebody on the cheek. Maybe that was just me, like, wishing that was me. Dude, I was watching the Raiders game, dude. And, dude, guys were coming off the field and turning and, like, walking, like, 5 yards down the sideline to get onto the sideline to avoid Pete Carroll, dude. The shit was so fucking funny. So, I don't know. Part of me says that Tom Brady and Pete Carroll have a good enough relationship where Tom was like, holy hell, we're going to be bad. Come take a bullet, and I'll give you 10 mil. Like, I feel like some of that is in there. But, yeah, the Raiders are not a team that should be running it back in 2026, 2027. But that has been it for the 2025-2026 regular season for the Between the Tackles podcast. The next episode, you hear us on Thursday, will be a very special episode. Very special. I am going to repeat myself a very special episode. Let's just say that we have a wild card matchup on the podcast coming for you on Thursday.
Let's go.
That's it for the Between the Tackles Week 18 review. We will catch you on Thursday. Goodbye.